Australia's housing market experienced elevated demand last year. There were more buyers than sellers. Property prices rose all around Australia. But the market's starting to slow down a bit. The heat's coming out of the markets a little bit. Sure, we're still seeing many active buyers in the market, or we were at the end of the year, and we're going to continue now into 2022. But for the first time since the pandemic began, the strong ramp-up of new listings has given buyers more of a choice. Sure, buyers still continue to outweigh sellers in the current market, but the gap's narrowing, meaning the strength of the seller's market is starting to soften a bit. So if you want to take advantage of the property markets in this new year, in 2022, I'm going to be running a series of summer podcasts in between the normal regular Michael Liardi podcast. We're going to just give you an extra show a week. Each week we're going to be producing three shows over January rather than the normal two, a combination of the new shows to keep you updated with what's happening in the market in property, money, finance, but we're also going to be replaying some of our previously republished show, like the one today where I'm going to be discussing whether property investment is an art or a science. We're going to talk a bit about borderless investing, and I'm also going to give you my mindset message. Now, if you're like many listeners to my podcast, you're probably going to have a bit of extra time this month. And if you're a relatively new subscriber, you probably only listened to a few of the back episodes, but you may have missed some of the early episodes. Oh, by the way, thank you for subscribing if you are one of the many, many new subscribers, because I really appreciate the subscribers. We've had over 3 million downloads of my podcast now. That's a milestone I'm very proud of. We've got listeners from all over the world. So thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you each week, to entertain you, to educate you. And even if you're a long-term subscriber, I believe you're still going to get some benefit from the shows we're going to replay, particularly the one today, which I believe has got an interesting message. You see, I've selected these shows because of their special messages. So you're going to find most of the shows in the summer series are not about what's happening right now in the market, but instead I'm going to be sharing some of the fundamentals with you that I believe are going to be critical for your success in 2022. So let's start with the first of our summer series now. Welcome to today's show. If you want to take advantage of our property markets and become financially independent, today's show will be of benefit because I've got three segments in which I share a number of concepts that will help you along the way. Firstly, we discuss is property investment an art or a science? Here's a spoiler, it's both. But you still need to listen to the balance of the show because I'm going to explain how and why they interact. I'm also going to discuss the concept of becoming a borderless investor, you know, investing in another state. I know a lot of people find this difficult. I see this particularly amongst intelligent and analytical people because they want more control. But bear with me as I explain to you some of the benefits and why you should at least consider becoming a borderless investor. And then in my mindset moment, I'm going to share a lesson that has made a difference to how I structure my life. And I'm going to talk about the big rocks in the jar of your life. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Liardi Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Liardi, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Is successful investing an art or a science? Now, I've discussed this in passing in previous podcasts, but I think this topic's so important that I'd like to spend some time exclusively discussing the concept. Because property investment isn't as straightforward as you might think. And if you don't do it right, you could end up losing a fortune or not getting the success that you're looking for in property. As I always say, don't let your emotions get in the way of a good property investment decision. In fact, of all the common mistakes I see property investors make, this is where most of them go wrong. They let the emotions get involved. Instead of undertaking appropriate due diligence by closely looking at property data, many investors are making emotional purchases, and it's causing poor investment decisions. They're buying where they live, where they want to holiday or retire, or they're even buying the type of property they want to live in. Now, what I've found is that most investors, they first of all, find a property they fall in love with or like, and then they start to look at the data and they look for information that confirms the decision they've already made, the property they want to buy. Of course, this is called confirmation bias. And it's using data the wrong way in the wrong order, because in general, you can make data say almost anything you want if you twist it hard enough, can't you? It just doesn't make good investment sense, does it? So what does? Well, over the years, I've found that investors tend to fall into one of three main categories, which led me to the question when I was defining this research that what I was wondering, is one style of investing more successful than others? So as I discuss these three types of investors, I want you to think, what type of investor are you? So let's look at the three type of investors. Firstly, there's the passive investor. The passive investor spends little time doing any due diligence. They're just keen to buy one of the first properties they come across. They're not really interested in understanding all the ins and outs that go along with creating a property portfolio. They don't learn a lot about finance or tax or the law or understanding the concept of compounding. Instead, a passive investor tends to let their emotions get involved in their investment decisions. And we know that can lead to disastrous results. Then there's the active investor. Now, an active investor puts in some degree of work in order to find a good investment prospect. They look at due diligence, they do research, they want to see if there's a likelihood of making a good, viable investment purchase. They generally look at the location, but they also start with having some basic understanding of property principles themselves, and often they seek professional advice in structuring their portfolio. And then there's the third type of investor, what I call the analytical investor. And they're the exact opposite almost of the passive investor that I first mentioned. Instead of undertaking little research and due diligence, the analytical investor tends to go overboard and spend months, sometimes even years, examining data, seeking advice, reading material in order to look for the ultimate investment property. Now, while it may seem the analytical investor is more likely to have investment success, it's not always the case. And I'll explain why in a moment. But first, let me discuss one of the issues with property data. There's no doubt it's important to understand property fundamentals. It's no doubt that it's important to research and have reliable property data. And the more extensive data you've got, the longer it goes back, the more accurate it is in forecasting future trends. But the problem is data is often wrong. Now, in previous podcasts, we've discussed data and the sort of research we do and how it's important. I've done a couple of sessions with my business partner, Kate Forbes, on that. But let me just explain to you one of the common data metrics that I find a lot of people use, the main one a lot of people use, and it's wrong. And that's median prices, which is, I think, probably the most commonly reported data, maybe other than auction clearance results. And it's researched by property pundits, but as I said, it's very unreliable. So I want to explain a number of things that you need to understand about median prices. First of all, median price is essentially the price of the middle home in a list of sales that have been arranged from the lowest to the highest. So if there are 11 sales, it's property number 6, there's 5 sold for lower price, there's 5 sold for a higher price. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what all properties in the area, in the location, would go for. It doesn't mean that a particular property that you're looking at, that you're examining, that you're researching, is going to go up by what the median price has, because it really depends upon what has happened in the market recently. So if a number of multi-million dollar homes came on the market and they all sold last month, that raises the median price. However, the value of a particular, maybe more moderately priced property may not have changed at all. Similarly, falling median prices could really indicate there were just more cheaper end properties sold. So, as I say, median prices are not that valuable. And the other thing is they're more valuable in some locations than others. So in suburbs where all the properties are largely homogenous, much the same, similar pricing, median prices are more accurate. But in suburbs where there are different sorts of properties, for example, ones that are very large suburbs and there are different neighborhoods, or the suburbs which are maybe close to the beach, close to the water, where one side of the road has got very different value properties to others, median price data in those locations don't mean much. nor does median prices for a city. So when they say Melbourne's median price has gone up or Sydney's median price has gone up, you've heard me say over and over again that you've got to get more granular. There isn't just one Melbourne or Sydney property market. And then when you look at different data providers, their statistics are very different as well. So again, this isn't a topic about research I want to discuss with you today. I just want to explain to you that median prices, the data that some people use, is not as valuable as they think. So back to my original question, though, is property investment an art or a science? And the answer is both. It's true that successful property investors do need to research and they do need to understand the data to aid their investment decisions. But on its own, it's not enough. Investors also need to complement any data that they've found with local area knowledge and expertise, plus experience and perspective in order to make the best informed decisions. So something looking at the data can make it say almost anything they want. The trick is knowing how to take that information and use it in conjunction with some practical experience in order to make an accurate investment decision. So the data won't tell you if the property you're looking at has got the right orientation, is on the right side of the street, whether the property has been done up or not, whether it's got value add potential, whether it's got a good floor plan. So there's no substitute for practical experience. Now, data's important. Research is important. It's a critical step in getting ready to invest, but it's only one of the many important steps. And that's why I believe using an experienced buyer's agent, such as my team at Metropole, is so valuable, because they bring the art part of the investment equation to property investors. People who may have done their research on the internet or property data, that's the science part. Our team are excelling agents. They've got on-the-ground experience to understand the local markets. They understand the drivers. So that's different from a lot of people who fly in and fly out and think they understand the market or move to buy new areas. There are so many young, inexperienced, but well-meaning buyer's agents out there at the moment who don't have that perspective. You can't have it until you've worked through a number of market cycles. You've got to understand why one side of the road's more valuable than the other, or why and where the strongest demand sits. Now, this sort of perspective is something money can't buy and data can't show you. Not only this, but at Metropole, our property strategists and buyer's agents each have their own area of expertise. It's a very different skill set. So our property strategists are experienced in the data, in the research, in the analysis, in the financing, the investment strategy, and they put a strategic plan together for you. They build a detailed, customized plan which involves their experience and the data. And then we get a buyer's agent to complement that by having the on-the-ground knowledge. And they're unique. They've got a different set of knowledge to the data people. Now, we see some buyer's agents travel, inspect, make an offer, and buy a property all over Australia. While they may have the science part of the equation worked out, they don't really have the art section, the perspective to interpret the data as it relates to a particular location. As the saying goes, it takes two to tango. One without the other is worthless. So what's the key lesson from this? Property investment's an expensive game. You can't afford to get it wrong. Engaging with experts with many years of experience can help you avoid making costly mistakes that a lot of naive investors do. So the cheapest investment advice you get is the one that makes you the most money, not the one that you get for free. So remember, property investment data is crucial when making an investment decision, but it's only half the job. Failing to combine the science and the art of property investment, it could end up costing you a fortune. And in my opinion, in our changing and moving market, what an investor needs is more than a buyer's agent, in fact, more than a strategist, but a holistic approach which involves finance and tax and estate planning and financial planning, as well as the data and the science. And that's what my team at Metropole offer. So why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, and why don't you find out what your options are? I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. Now, a moment ago, we discussed the concept of is property investment an art or a science? And in this segment of today's podcast, I'd like to discuss with you the idea of becoming a borderless investor, you know, investing in another state. And the short answer is you should be considering it. I don't know your current situation. I don't know where you have properties, if you have any at all, but I think it's something that you should consider, because moving forward in 10 years' time, when you look back and you see the value of properties in our big capital cities of Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, they're going to very likely, well-located properties are very likely going to have doubled. Not all properties, but the thought is down the track, when you want to live off your property portfolio, you're going to want to own properties in our big international cities. On that basis, you should not just consider buying in your backyard. And for a lot of people listening to this podcast, you're probably not living in these big cities at all. Anyway, what I'm saying is one of the least important characteristics of where your investment property should be is the proximity to where you are, where you live. So I've always been a proponent of borderless investing, and that may just be somewhere else in your own state or interstate, basically anywhere in Australia where the fundamentals stack up. Now, of course, investing interstate isn't without risk. To be a successful investor, somebody who's built a lasting portfolio, you've got to adopt a diversification strategy. So you've got to have a number of different, I mean, I've personally got commercial, industrial, residential properties in many locations, but that takes time to build up. But in due course, you should also have the benefit of that. Now, I may sound like a broken record, but there isn't one single property market in Australia. So you can't just invest somewhere and say, I've got a property. Any property can be an investment, but it's not necessarily investment grade, as I've just said earlier on today. So our country is made up of many real estate markets, and they don't always move in sync. And I'm not trying to time the market, but by having investments in various locations, when you go back to refinance, you can often say to the bank, well, you know, just pay attention to my Brisbane property. Don't worry about the Sydney property that may not have gone up this year. Anyway, just look at what happened to the various property markets last year. You've got evidence of how very different they are. And it's not just one state from another. In fact, even in the same state, you'll find different markets or sub-markets behaving differently. Anyway, back to the big benefits of becoming a borderless investor. Investing in a city other than your own can spread some of the risk across multiple markets, and you can take advantage of the different growth cycles that may be stronger than in the area where you live. Over the years, I've come across a large number of investors who strictly buy in their own state, or worse, in their own city, or even worse, in their own suburb, because it's in their comfort zone. It just makes sense to them, and they can easily visit the property and keep an eye on it. They think that they've got more control that way. They make this huge investment decision based on proximity to where they live rather than on facts and research. This is a decision that's often made to their detriment in the long run. Think about it. If you limit your investment options to your own backyard, are you really setting yourself up for financial success? Furthermore, searching for properties in your own area isn't really researching. Rather, it's searching for facts to support your already made preconceived opinion that that area is a good place to invest or live. After all, you've got a vested interest in that outcome, haven't you? You already own your home there and you're hoping it's going to grow in value. As I said earlier on in today's podcast, this is known as confirmation bias, and it's a common problem for a lot of property investors. Now, some investors tell me they like to buy in their own area because it's a suburb they enjoy living in, so they assume other people will as well. Well, might be the case. But really, is this the best criteria on which to base your investment decisions? Well, I like to live here, so my tenant's going to want to as well. What about public transport? You may have a car, but the tenant may rely on public transport. They may not find the area convenient like you do. What about the drivers of capital growth? What about the supply and demand ratios? Are there a broad range of people living in the area? Family, students, professionals, migrants? Or is it a select group of people who live in the suburb? What about vacancy rates? The area may be a desirable place to live where you live, but if there are plenty of properties on the rental market already, you may be waiting too long in between tenancies. These are just some of the questions I encourage people to ask themselves when deciding where to invest. And one of the truths about investment in property is diversification is important. Now, this is very different to having a philosophy of diversification of investments. It's another whole ballgame in which I've got strong opinions. It's those investors who've got diversified property portfolios that are going to find they benefit as different capital cities have their own days in the sun, as their cycles peak at different times. Another reason for diversification is there's also land tax issues to take into consideration. If you acquire a number of property assets in your own state, you could end up paying a whopping land tax bill every year. By spreading your risks and buying properties in various locations, you might minimize the amount of land tax you're required to pay. Now, that's not a reason to diversify, but it's one of the possible benefits. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting you invest in other states just for the sake of it. What I'm recommending is that as an investor, as you build your property portfolio, you should consider owning investments in the three big capital cities of Australia. Now, again, I'm not advocating trying to time the market, as timing the market's more important. Sure, it's nice to ride the wave of properties as it rises. So if you're now keen to become a borderless investor, but you're not quite sure what to do next, the answer is get a local expert to help you. But be careful not to work with those buyer's agents who fly in and fly out, and they just don't have the perspective that you get from being on the ground for years, like I mentioned a bit earlier on the show. Once you've got a local expert on your side, you can start enjoying the benefits that this diversified strategy will give you. You're going to be exposed to different property markets. You're more likely to have one or two properties growing in value strongly, because we know that each state's at a different stage of the cycle. And during every property cycle, there are periods when there's minimal or no growth or property values go backwards. As I said a short while ago, if you're interested in getting involved in property and taking advantage of the markets in 2021, my team at Metropole would love to help you, because we have offices in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Our property strategists put the plan together, but then our on-the-ground buyer's agents have the perspective. Back to what we said right at the beginning, a combination of art and science. Go to metropole.com.au and find out about what we do and how we could help you. I'd love to be part of your investment journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Today I'd like to tell you a story about big rocks. And no, it's not a geology lesson. It's a lesson about time management, about success, about achieving the priorities in your life. And I'm going to tell you a story that you may have heard, but please keep listening, because I'm then going to explain to you what I'm doing personally. You see, a lot of people say, Michael, you're very successful. How do you do that? Others say, Michael, you get so much done. How are you so productive? I'm going to share that with you. Now, I'm not telling you I'm so great. I'm just explaining to you what I've done to achieve what I want in my life, and maybe you'll get some ideas from it as well. So my question to you is, what are the big rocks in your life? Put simply, your big rocks are your priorities. They're the tasks, the projects, or the goals you absolutely must accomplish. If you're like most people, you're going to be very busy. But how productive are you? Successful people always find a way to focus on what's most important, while the average person tends to run into one of three problems. The first problem that stops them being most productive is they have too many priorities. Think about it. If you've got 30 priorities, think 30 things that are all important to you, if everything's important to you, you really have got no priorities, do you? The second thing that stops a lot of people is they don't or can't differentiate the truly important priorities in their life. And the third thing I found that stops many people is, for a number of reasons, they let other less important things get in the way of focusing on what's really important, what really matters. Now, setting your priorities, your big rocks, can be hard. We've all got different priorities. But before I'm going to go into how you can organize them, let me tell you a story about big rocks. It goes like this. One day, a teacher was speaking to a group of students. She pulled out a large jar and put it on the table, and then she produced about a dozen big rocks and placed them one at a time into the jar. When the jar was filled to the top and no more rocks would fit in, she asked, "Is the jar full?" And everyone said, "Yes." "Really?" asked the teacher. "Let's see." Then she took out some gravel and dumped the gravel in. She shook the jar, causing it to fall between the spaces between the big rocks. She asked the students again, Is the jar full? Her class was catching on. Probably not, said one of them. Very good, she replied. And then she brought out a bucket of sand and dumped the sand in, and it went in all the spaces between the rocks and the gravel. Then she asked, is the jar full? Well, the class caught on by then and they said, no. Excellent, she replied. Then she grabbed a jug of water and poured it in until the jar was filled to the brim. And then the teacher looked intently back at the students and asked, well, what's the point of this illustration? And one student said, you can always fit more things into your life if you really work at it. The teacher said, well, that's true, but that's not really the point of this illustration. She said, this teaches you that if you don't put the big rocks in first, you'll never get them in the jar. So she asked her students, what are the big rocks in your life? She asked them, is it time with your loved ones? Is it your faith, your education, your dreams? Is it your career, a worthy cause, teaching or mentoring others? And then she concluded her lesson to these university students by repeating the important message. Remember, these big rocks go in first, otherwise you'll never get them in. So what does all this mean for you? Well, your big rocks are the things on your bucket list, your non-negotiable goals, your dreams, your true desires, things that you can do to make your business or your life or your employment or your investments more successful, things that fulfill you, things you can do to make you healthier and happier. Your pebbles, they're things that you love to do or need to do, but aren't crucial to your happiness or your success or your fulfillment. I don't know, maybe projects around your house, maybe it's watching your favourite football team, maybe it's Mahjong lessons or bridge lessons. They're the pebbles in your life. The sand is the mundane day-to-day tasks in your life. Could be checking emails, walking the dog, paying bills, grocery shopping. I don't know what's it for you. And the jar, that's your life, your time, your energy, your budget, your resources. By the way, you only get one jar. Now, these are all different for everyone. One person's big rock may be another person's sand. I mentioned a moment ago that for some people, the sand is going to be, or the pebbles could well be, walking a dog. I know for both my boys who've got dogs and an important part of their families, walking the dogs would be a rock. They actually spend time with them. Anyway, I'll go through in a moment how I handle this, but what I was getting at was one person's big rocks may be another person's sand. So make sure you've got your big rocks in your calendar or your to-do list as not only urgent, but important items. Otherwise, you're going to get sidetracked. Most people get distracted by other people's priorities, things that seem urgent, but aren't necessarily important. In big rocks, they fill their jar with lots of pebbles and sand, but no big rocks, none at all. Remember, I said, you only get one jar. You don't have unlimited time. You don't have endless money. You don't have untold resources or energy to do whatever you want. You can't fit everything that you'd like to fit into your jar. So put the big rocks in first, then your pebbles, then your sand. This way you've prioritized your big rocks and you're going to complete those before you move on to what may seem important, may seem urgent, but actually is less important. Now, let me explain to you how I put this concept into action. It may give you some clues. First of all, I made a list of my big rocks, 6 of them, my pebbles, 10 of them, and my sand. So I asked myself, what's on my bucket list? What are my non-negotiables in life? What's the highest and best use of my time and my business? So the first thing, I made a list of my big rocks. And the second thing I did was I put my big rocks into my calendar first, before somebody else grabbed the time. Then I started filling in the time with pebbles and sand. So my holiday times away with Pam for next year are already blocked out. Now, I don't know exactly where I'm going to go with COVID, but that doesn't matter. The concept is that the time is there and that won't change. The times I set aside each week for visiting my children and grandchildren are blocked out in my calendar for a whole year in advance. They can't be moved. No other appointment with clients or anything that's going to make me money is not anywhere near as important as my time with my children and my grandchildren. That's a big rock that doesn't move. My afternoon walks along the beach, they're blocked out. There's no room to do anything else at that time of the day. And my highest and best business tasks, like writing and recording my podcast, they're locked into my calendar. Now, I've left some space for incoming and last-minute pebbles and sand. I've learned that what gets scheduled gets done, and what doesn't get scheduled often doesn't get done. So I made a list, then I put them in my calendar. So I've scheduled my big rocks in the morning, interestingly. You see, I know when I'm most efficient, and that's first thing in the morning, and actually last thing in the afternoon. I'm not as efficient or creative in the middle of the day, but we're all different, aren't we? I've also learned the principle of getting important things done first in the morning. So then when I've got them done, I can actually get on with other things because things crop up every day. So I've learned to ask myself, is this a big rock? When I need to decide how best to spend my time, my energy, my money, I always ask myself this important question. Is this a big rock? If it is, I make sure I find the time to put it in the jar. Now, this concept is so simple, yet it's profound. Now, I learned it from Stephen Covey, author of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, who taught me the difference between being busy and being productive. It's not about getting more stuff done. It's about getting the most important things done. So my question to you is, what are the big rocks in your life, in your career, in your relationship, in your wealth, in your health? And for each of these big rocks, are they in place? Have you put them into your jar first? If not, are you working on getting them in place, or have you neglected them? If you don't consciously work on your big rocks, you're never going to get them in place. So I hope that explaining this to you has helped you understand how to get your priorities in the right order to make sure that they get done. It's been a slightly longer message today, a longer mindset message. Doesn't matter. It's such an important message. I thought it was worth spending the time teaching you the concept of the big rocks in your life. Now it's up to you to take action and implement the lesson I've taught you. Well, we covered a lot in today's show, didn't we? Now, you know I regularly have guests on this podcast, but once a month I try and have a show that's just me to get some important concepts across. And if you found these concepts will be a benefit for you in your investment journey, why not share them with somebody else? Why not tell somebody else about the Michael Yardley podcast? There's a share button on every podcast app. Or, of course, you can just tell them about it the old-fashioned way or leave a review. And if you don't already subscribe, why not subscribe to this podcast on your favourite podcast app? And in between, if you want to catch up with me, just look on social media and look for Michael Yardney, or you can join our private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group. I look forward to being back with you again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?